Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm EQMM's editor, Janet Hutchings. Our selection for this holiday season is a story set partly at Christmas. It's by Hollis Seaman, who came in third in last year's Reader's Award competition for her story, Black Swallowtail. The upstate New York author is also a novelist, whose 2014 novel, Somebody Up There Hates You, was named a best book for young adults by the American Library Association. Here is Book Lovers by Hollis Seaman, read by the author. You can also find it in our current issue, November-December 2022.
Listen, if you think I wanted to be there in that dusty old library full of dusty old books and dusty old people and dusty old spiders, well, you're crazy as a bedbug. I mean, really? I'm 15 years old, it's the middle of the 20th century when tyranny and cruel and unusual punishment are supposed to be outlawed, right? 1962, to be exact. The librarian, Anna Lee, who I have to admit is young and pretty and wears perfect makeup and is not dusty at all, says being exact is what library life is all about. I don't know about that, but I do know that I was there in the dusty old blah blah every weekend, all weekend, because it was, get this, court ordered. Community service, the judge said. Yep, I had to work every single weekend for 3 months in the Van Lickensburg Village Library. How unfair is that? But you know, if we're being honest here, I probably did deserve it. For being such a stupid, idiotic, selfish, moronic jerk. Maybe I should explain. It goes like this. I come from the bad, as in poor, side of the village, have zip for cash, wear clothes that come exclusively from Goodwill. Every other girl in the 10th grade at Washington Irving High School has at least one hooded sweater that she's been wearing, hood pulled up if she runs outside to smoke a forbidden naturally cig, or sleeves tied around her waist, emphasizes the tiny waist and lifts the, well, you know what. Looking cool as all get out. But me? No. They're expensive, those sweaters, and never turn up at Goodwill. I for sure cannot ask my mom to buy me one, even for Christmas. She'll get that sad face that means there is no way on this green earth she can afford it, not if my little sister and brothers want stuff for Christmas, which, of course, they do. And, or, mom will start working extra shifts at one of her two jobs, or both. Either way, I'd feel like a total heel, so asking her is out. But a sweater like that, well, it's almost a necessity. In 10th grade, I mean. Right? Well, so I thought once upon a time. So my friend, not anymore, and probably never really, Sherry, took me into the local fancy-ass dress shop where the snooty girls shop, and she whispered in my ear, "You're so slim, Callie, that you can just go into the dressing room and wrap one of those sweaters. Ooh! How about this peach-colored one? Isn't it pretty? Around you, and put your coat on over it and walk on out of here, la-di-da, all sweet and innocent. No one will even notice." Now, let me state for the record that I had never shoplifted in my life, ever. Sherry bragged that she did it all the time, and she never got caught, and she was an expert. Was I such a chicken that I was scared to even try? And wasn't that just the prettiest sweater ever? So much nicer than, well, that. Sherry pointed and kind of sneer-smiled at what I was wearing that day, and said she was 100% certain that if I just oh so casually took a couple of things into the dressing room and did as she'd instructed with the beautiful sweater, I'd be fine. I ran my fingers over the sweater. It was amazingly soft. I'd never felt anything like it. I could hardly stand to lift my hand away. And if Sherry's plan was 100% safe and all... Right. Let me just say that the old lady who works in that fancy-ass store isn't as dumb as she looks. And Sherry ran like a bat out of hell and left me all alone to face the music. And you know, that was a really nice sweater. Cashmere, it turns out, pale peach like the inside of a shell, and I would have looked great in it. But it counted against me in court, it being cashmere, high-end fashion and all. Who knew? I mean, I had never touched cashmere in my life and probably never will again. Don't even ask how my mom's face looked when she had to come pick me up at the police station, the twins in tow. Do not ask. Sad doesn't begin to cover it. Shame piled on top of sadness. It was awful. I never, ever want to see that look on her face again. Ever. End of story. Except for what I've already told you about spending all of my weekends in the dusty old town library ever since the end of September. Except really, there's a lot more to tell. So here goes the rest of my confession. Okay, I'm a criminal, right? With a court-ordered job. But I swear to God that I never, ever meant for anyone to get hurt because of me working in the library and being sort of nosy and meddling and all. How could anyone get hurt by a little natural girlish curiosity? Honestly. I mean, isn't that sort of unlikely? But someone did get hurt, and I felt pretty awful about it. Another confession. I actually liked the library job after a couple of weekends. It's a quiet, warm, secret kind of place. So many books on the shelves, and you know what? They're free for the taking. Well, for the borrowing. Who knew? I mean, in my house, we don't have books or much else. The occasional man, an always tired mom, a pack of kids, a lot of yelling. Mess? Yes. Bologna on toast? Yes. Books? No. But here, man, there are shelves and shelves and shelves of them. And Anna Lee, the pretty young librarian, remember, told me that after I reshelved all the loose books and made everything all neat and tidy, I could sit in the ragged old leather chair that's sort of hidden behind the fiction section and read as long as I wanted to. She even started handing me books I might like. By mid-October, I'd read some really good ones. Jane Eyre, Rebecca, Wuthering Heights. See, Anna Lee guessed, correctly, that a girl like me might have a sort of dark taste in reading. Actually, her exact words were, "You'll like these gothic, romantic novels. I've never known a smart 15-year-old girl who doesn't." And I was so surprised and then embarrassed to hear that smart word applied to stupid, idiotic, moronic me that I decided to try to live up to it. I figure, lots of chances to educate myself around here, right? Anna Lee also keeps all of these old classic kind of novels on the shelves, even if hardly anybody checks them out anymore. She insists on it, stocking true literature, she says. They're all there, lined up in alphabetical order, and that makes me happy for some reason. I mean, there's something nice about always knowing where things are, right? And knowing that a smart girl like me can catch up with the rest of the world, bookwise. It's also pretty cool that people can come into the library to just sit around and get warm if they want to. A whole bunch of old men, they come in to read the newspapers or magazines, hang out, gossip. Anna Lee, she subscribes to things that only the old men like, on purpose. We have current copies of Popular Mechanics and Hordes Dairyman, stuff like that. Anyway, around the time the leaves fell off the trees and people were putting pumpkins on their porches, I started noticing this weird thing that happened every Sunday morning at the library around 11 o'clock after church let out. Every Sunday, in comes this young, super pretty woman with blonde hair. But her hair is all scraped back into an old lady bun, and she doesn't wear makeup, not even lipstick. And her clothes? Totally dowdy. Expensive, but you know, really frumpy? To be exact, long tweed skirt, wool socks, heavy sweater, whole body covered up and invisible, just her pretty face showing. Like she's 60 instead of 22 or something. And she walks sort of bent over and doesn't look up much. Like she's always scared. I don't know. But this is a strange, sad person. That much I can say. Anyway, every Sunday, in she comes and goes straight to the fiction section where I'm usually sitting, sort of off to the side in my leather reading chair, and she takes a book off the shelf and opens it. Okay, not so weird, you think. So she likes to read, so what? But no, she doesn't read that book even for a second. All she does is this. Looks real close at the spine, like checking the title or the author or something, then opens the book, flipping around to a certain page, then she sticks a scrap of bright pink paper into that page, like a little bookmark, closes it up, puts it back on the shelf, leaving it sticking out a tiny bit from the rows of others, which I have very nicely lined up so they're all even and all. Then she grabs another book, totally at random, doesn't even look at the cover, takes it over to Anna Lee, checks it out, and leaves. Hardly says a word to Anna Lee, doesn't stop to chat like everyone else does, doesn't even smile, just checks out her book and goes. She's in and out of the library in about 3 minutes flat. But then, and this is the good part, just before noon, a really cute guy, also in his 20s, but dressed in work clothes, brown Carhartt jacket, grubby jeans, tan boots, faded flannel shirt, comes in. And he goes straight to that same fiction section, runs his hand down the shelves, finds the sticking out book, flips to the little pink piece of paper she's left in it, takes it out, scribbles on it with a pencil, shoves it into his jacket pocket, puts the book back, and leaves. He doesn't take any books out, just leaves. He saunters by the magazine, sometimes picks up a National Geographic and thumbs through it, but he's always out of there in a few minutes too, and he always has a smile on his face when he's walking out. Like I said, weird. So I do what any normally curious person would do, right? After that woman leaves one Sunday, I scoot on over to the book, where she's put her pink piece of paper, to see what it says. I have this idea that it's a love note, all mushy and sweet, written to cute guy, and that's why he smiles every time he grabs one. I find the book she's left sticking out, just a smidge. The House of Mirth by Edith Wharton, which looks like one I'd like, actually. The little pink piece of paper is on page 215. I pull it out, kind of excited to see what it says, and it says nothing at all. It's as blank as my face at that moment. I sniff it, hoping for perfume, something sexy or lovey-dovey. Nope. It's just a piece of pink paper torn at the edges like it came from a bigger sheet of construction paper, like kindergarten stuff. Well, that's a disappointment. I put it back exactly where it was, feeling let down, and I replace the book, sticking out just that exact same smidge from the others. But hey, when cute guy comes in a few minutes later and he finds it and pulls it from the book and writes something on it and puts it in his pocket, he's smiling and happy as all get out. It's all pretty strange. So after that, I ask Anna Lee who she is, that woman who shows up every Sunday. We sit in Anna Lee's little office where she makes me a cup of tea and she shakes her head, kind of sad. Oh, that's Brenda. I went to school with her. Wait, I say, blowing on my tea to cool it. I'm not too sure how to drink tea, even though everyone in those books I've been reading does it, like, constantly. Tea is not a beverage of choice in my house. Kool-Aid? Yes. Beer? Yes. Tea? You gotta be kidding. Wait, she's your age? She looks way older. I think about that. No, wait, she dresses way older. I gesture at Anna Lee's bright turquoise dress. I mean, you always look great. And honest to God, I'm not brown-nosing here. Anna Lee always does look great. She smiles and then looks sad all over again. It's funny. Brenda used to be one of the sharpest dressers in school, so cute and friendly, really popular, but then she holds out a package of Lorna Doone cookies to me and takes one herself. She dunks it into her tea, gets it just a bit soft, and sort of eases it into her mouth. It takes a minute for the cookie to go down and for her to continue that sentence. I swear that Anna Lee knows how to create suspense like my favorite writers. But then she married Mr. Thompson. She sighs and looks at me like I should know what this means. Who's that? I say, swallowing the last of my own Lorna Doone. The rest of that cookie is now a whole lot of sludge in the bottom of my mug of tea. That dunking thing had not gone well. Anna Lee stares. You don't know him, honestly? He's the richest man in town. They live in that big red brick house right there on the corner. She waves a hand in an easterly direction. Right there. It's one of the biggest houses in the village. Surely you've seen it, California. I better stop here to explain this California thing. All right. I admit, it is my full name. There's a reason, of course. My mom, when she was a carefree girl of 16, had big plans to move there, to get away from pokey, cold, dusty old upstate Van Lykensburg, New York, and live in constant sunshine. Probably become a big Hollywood star. She was gorgeous back in those days. But I came along before she even had a chance to graduate high school or pack her bags or buy a Greyhound ticket. All she could do was give me the name of her dream place. And then more of us came along. My two kid brothers, and then two more boy and girl twins. You get it. My mom is stuck here forever. And by the way, I wouldn't let anyone else call me by that full name, ever. I'm just Callie in school. But Annalie, well, she's special and she's my boss, so what the hey? I shrug. I don't know many rich people. Annalie gives me a long look. Well, Mr. Thompson's one you don't want to know anyway. He runs the bank here in the village, a real bet. Let's just say he's not a nice man. And he married Brenda, I think, because her parents were so relieved to have him ask and to get him to forgive the mortgage on their farm. People say they were about to lose it, the farm they'd worked all their lives for. Sort of like they bartered Brenda for that farm. She looks pissed off, then shakes her head again. Well, I don't know if that's true. Not really. Anyway, he keeps her on a very short leash. Seems like he hardly lets her draw breath on her own. He's middle-aged, she's young. I think he's probably jealous and suspicious. He watches her like a hawk, honestly. Goes home every day for lunch at noon as if he's checking on her. I see him walking by. She gets out for a while on Sundays, that's all. Church, then the library, then straight back home. Annalie frowns. Poor thing. And obviously he picks out her clothes. God, they're awful. Truer words were never spoken. Those are awful clothes. But I have one more question. So what about the guy who comes in after her? What's his story? Annalie finishes her tea with one graceful sip. I don't know who he is. He never checks anything out. Doesn't even have a library card as far as I know. She gathers up the cookie package and the teacups, pursing her lips. That's fine, though. Anyone can use the library anytime for anything they want. We are a public library. Always remember that, California. We're here to serve the public. Huh. I could, right then, tell her about the little pink bookmarks, which I'm sure she's never noticed. I should have told her. Maybe that would have prevented the, well, everything that happened later. But I didn't. I was kind of pleased, I guess, to have a little secret of my own. It was a mystery, and I wanted to figure it out myself. That's what a smart girl would do, right? After that little tea time talk, you can bet I was even more interested. I mean, wasn't Brenda like a heroine in one of those novels, a poor young girl trapped, married to a rich old man, like a princess locked inside a tower, a scared woman locked in a big old house? As October faded into gray, sleety November, I watched Brenda really carefully every Sunday. The minute she left the library, I jumped up and checked to see where she'd left her little pink bookmark. I even kept a list, and here it is, in no particular order. Once, in The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain, page 110. Other times, Madame Bovary by Gustave Flaubert, also on my list of books to read, page 130. Of Human Bondage by Somerset Maugham, page 245, Mrs. Dalloway by Virginia Woolf, page 315, and Vanity Fair by William Makepeace Thackeray, I'm putting in his middle name because it's so cool, page 330. After I checked where she'd left the markers, I put them back exactly the way she had herself, and like clockwork, in came Cute Guy. He pulled out that day's marker, jotted something down, pocketed the paper, and scooted on out of there, grinning ear to ear every time. Just the same. So, as you figured out by this many Sundays going by, it was now almost Christmas. Annalie and I put a sweet-smelling wreath on the library door, and every kid who came in got a candy cane. And Annalie brought in homemade cookies and made hot cocoa, let the old guys eat and drink right there in the reading room. They loved it. And I'll admit, I didn't mind coming to work anymore, not at all. I mean, I was almost done with community service, but I thought maybe I'd just keep coming. It was kind of like a better home than my own, you know? A lot more peaceful, anyway. I mean, by then I was checking books out, too, and reading them at home and in school, whenever I could sneak a page or two in, but there was no place like that leather chair in the back of the fiction section for an afternoon of peaceful reading. And a little casual spying. But then I did something stupid, and people got hurt, and I didn't mean for that to happen, I swear. It was the week before Christmas, and things were a little slow that Sunday, except for our regular Brenda. Maybe I was bored, maybe I just wanted to see what would happen, I don't know. But really, all I did was this. That Sunday, I switched one of Brenda's little pink bookmarkers. She'd left it in The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, page 115. I took it out and put it in Moms of Human Bondage, page 245. If you're paying attention, you'll remember that that's one of the books she'd used before. Same book, same page. So I figured that it probably wouldn't matter at all. It was just a book, right? And one he'd seen before. What the hey? Still, I was curious, so I sat back and waited for cute guy to come get it out, which he did, big grin on his face. I think he even spotted me sitting in my chair, and I swear to God he winked at me. Later, that made me feel even worse. So, after school on Monday, I'm home making jelly sandwiches for the twins so they'll be quiet and let me watch Bandstand in peace. I watch it to see the girls' outfits, of course, like everybody else. Some really cute hooded sweaters on those girls. But right after the show starts, the twins start whining and begging me to take them to the library. It's their new favorite place. They're 6 years old, and if you know any six-year-olds, you understand that there's no use arguing. Their names, by the way, are Woody, the boy, and Holly, the girl. Yep, Mom's California dream hadn't died, not quite, even after all these years. It's my job to watch them. Mom's shift at the Old Dutch starts at 4 p.m. My other brothers, Frisco and Angelo, hey, they're 13 and 12, they just run wild, take care of themselves, not my problem. Anyway, I sigh and say, okay. The twins jump up and down, all happy. I turn off the TV, wash the sticky purple gunk off their faces, and wrestle them into their coats and boots and hats and mittens, and off we go. It's not a long walk to the library, even from this side of the tracks, even on a bitter cold, snowy winter afternoon. Small village, after all. But halfway there, I hear sirens and see the rescue squad ambulance flying by, and it's heading toward the library, and then I'm running, hauling Holly and Woody along as fast as their little legs can go. When I get there, Annalie and the old guys are all standing outside on the library front porch, shivering. There's the ambulance and the sheriff's car right up the street, in front of the big brick house on the corner. I shove the kids into the library, tell them they can get books in the kids' room, and slam the door behind them. Then I go and stand next to Annalie. She grabs my hand. We're quiet, but the old men are chattering away, all excited. I hear bits and pieces. Old bastard Thompson's house. Deserves it. About time that little bitch got shots fired, by God. Annalie turns and hisses at them. Shut up. Just shut up. And they do. We all watch. Cute guy's not moving when they rush him to the ambulance on a stretcher, and what seems odd to me, he's lying face down on the stretcher. Of course, they've draped a sheet over him, but we can see his bare back and shoulders, and the sheet is soaked in blood, some of it dripping bright red into the snow. Annalie gasps and puts a hand to her mouth. We cling together. And then Brenda runs out, dressed only in something that looks like a white lacy slip, spattered with wet red splotches. She follows right behind the stretcher and she climbs into the back of the ambulance with him. Barefoot, I keep thinking. She ran right out into the snow barefoot and nearly naked, just to stay with him when he was hurt. Isn't that true love, with a capital L? The old men are muttering now under their breath. I'm speechless. I have no idea what it all means. Honestly, I'm just stunned. But Annalie sighs, then whispers into my ear, oh my God, California, do you get it? I think maybe they were in bed together, Brenda and that guy, when Mr. Thompson came home from the bank and he grabbed his shotgun and he flat out shot the guy. We heard the shot from inside the library. It was that loud. My God, think about it. He could have killed them both. Because, well, I mean, there they were. Together. The ambulance roars off. We wait a few more minutes, shivering in the frozen air. Then Mr. Thompson comes out with two deputies, one on either side of him. No handcuffs, no fuss. He looks perfectly calm, almost cheerful. Doesn't say a word, climbs into the back seat of the sheriff's car, and that is pretty much that. In a little while, I go inside the library and get the twins. I can't stop shivering, but they're warm and happy as little clams in the kids' room, each carrying two books they want to take home. Annalie checks them out, almost like nothing has happened. But something has happened. I can't stop shaking for the rest of the afternoon, because somehow I know it's all my fault. Somehow or other, it's my stupid, idiotic, moronic fault. It has to be. That night, I curl around Holly in the bed we share. She's warm. I'm still half frozen. And when I close my eyes, all I see is white snow, speckled with red, and Brenda's bare feet running through it. And by then, I understand what I did to make it happen. Okay, I bet you figured it out long before I did, right? How it happened and why. It took me a while. But that night, I was putting the kids to bed, and one of them asked me to read them their story. That's a new bedtime routine we've been doing. I picked up Charlotte's Web, the book we've been working on, chapter by chapter. I opened it to the page where we stopped last night, marked with a little piece of paper. Then, blam, it hit me. Those little pink bookmarks Brenda was leaving? See, I hadn't been so wrong. After all, they were love notes, really. Appointment cards, a simple system of times when they could meet, when her husband would be at work, safely tucked into a meeting or something, when they could be together. Get it? Brenda just looked at the book's spines, at the writer's names. Then she chose the one she needed, one where the author's last name started with the letter that matched a day of the week. M.T. W, T, H, or F. Mom, Twain, Wharton, Thackeray, Flaubert, or Fitzgerald. See? The page numbers were times. 130, 245, 315, and so on. What I'd done with my little switcheroo was screw it all up, that system. I took the marker out of Fitzgerald, Friday, 145, and stuck it into Mom, Monday, 245. And cute guy, well, he'd seen M245, so naturally that's when he showed up at Brenda's house. And Brenda, she made a perfectly understandable but stupid, moronic, idiotic decision of her own. She let him in, and she let him kiss her, and then... Well, then Mr. Thompson came home from the bank around 3:30, and you know the rest. My fault. Much worse than trying to shoplift a pretty peach sweater, right? I mean, someone got shot. But there was no court appearance this time, no community service, no one knew a thing about it. I got off scot-free. And I felt like utter crap about it for a long, long time. But you know, it didn't turn out so bad in the end. Cute guy got a whole lot of birdshot dug out of his back and behind, we heard, but he was fine after a while. Mr. Thompson paid a big fine and got a suspended sentence. Hey, no court-ordered job for that guy. Not one bit fair, right? But he is rich, and he does know the right people, and I guess that's how things go. He still lives in his same house, and he still runs the bank, and some people think what he did was perfectly okay. Cheating wife and all that. Jerks. Don't they appreciate young love, romance, a nice gothic plot? And do not even ask why Brenda let him in on the wrong day at the wrong time and let him stay, if only for a little while. If you have to ask that, you know nothing about love either. Nothing at all. And that is just plain sad. Still, it was sort of okay because of the way it worked out. Here's your happy ending, dear reader. Brenda got a quickie divorce, we hear, and she went off with cute guy, and we haven't seen either one in a long time, but I'm pretty darn sure that she wears much cuter clothes now. Probably can't afford any cashmere sweaters, not by a long shot, but what does that matter? Now Brenda stands up straight, looks people in the eye, smiles, lets her hair fall down her back, all blonde and shiny, no more old lady look. Brenda gets to be young again. I dream about her sometimes. I see her walking along a beach, bare feet skipping through the warm sand. Her toenails are painted a nice, soft peach. And now it's getting towards spring here in Van Lickensburg. Well, honestly, it's still mucky old mud season, but maybe soon there'll be apple blossoms in the orchards and lambs in the fields. And guess what? I still work at the library every weekend, only now I get paid. A little bit. And I still get to read in the leather chair a couple hours each day. I've just finished The Woman in White. Now that's a book. Anyway, Annalee keeps telling me that if I stay in school and get good grades and graduate and all, I'll make a really fine librarian because I notice things, I pay attention, and I'm smart. Well, so she says. I'm not so sure I believe her, not yet. I have done a couple of really stupid things, right? But I'm trying my best to get smarter. Honestly, I am, and I do love books. I really, really do. And I hear that there are some pretty great libraries in California. What I'm going to do, I swear, is this. I'm going to take my mom, Woody, and Holly, and even Frisco and Angelo, if they can behave themselves, and we're heading out. We'll go west, straight on into the sunshine. Someday.
Book Lovers is copyrighted by Hollis Seaman. Music for this podcast was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing and editing for the podcast were done by Kevin Wheeler and Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.elleryqueenmysterymagazine.com.